Well, sometimes they have to kill us. They have to kill us. Because they can't break our spirit.
Look, I don't have to do this.
You don't have any choice.
I'm trying to help you people. Now, why won't you accept that?
It's in our DNA. You have to do what old man says.
What makes you such a threat?
We choose the right to be who we are. We know the difference between the reality of freedom and the illusion of freedom. There's a way to live with Earth and a way not to live with Earth. We choose the way of Earth. It's about power, Ray.
Prophecy Keepers Radio.
This is Joss Ogonie, Will Bluewater, a seventh great grandson of Samanuka, keeper of the Holy Cherokee Ark, who during the American Revolution became first beloved man of the Cherokee, head man of the Upper, Middle, and Lower Cherokee. Please join us at 5 p.m. Pacific Time on Sunday evening and learn how you, regardless of ancestry, may gain the privilege of worshiping as you please, even using indigenous, plant-based, native sacraments. Aho. You are listening to a pre-recorded interview from the archives of Prophecy Keepers Radio. You have been led by the Spirit to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a cooperative service of the White Roots of Peace Council. Whether it be the modern Asaga of Peru, the current Kahunas of Hawaii, today's medicine people of the Americas, the Holy Ones of Africa, shamans of the East, North, West, and South, or the present-day Atawehis of the Cherokee, we bring you the traditional elders and teachers of our modern times and their confidants from the Americas, the steppes of Asia, the Holy Land, the islands of the sea, Africa, and Australasia. We have not been conquered, and we defy the established order. This is Will Bluewater, the host of Prophecy Keepers Radio, speaking on behalf of the White Roots of Peace Council.
It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow? It's the 500-year resistance. You can't break the connection. Follow?
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius. OCO, Ginalii, this is Blue Otter coming to you from the Cumberland Plateau, the ancient home of the Aniuntikwalaski, the people of the lightning and thunder, or the military protectors of the Cherokee Nation.
Well, hello, everybody. This is your old buddy Bluewater coming to you from Booger County, the mysterious Ozarks of Mid-America. And our honored guest today is Michael Horn from TheyFly.com. Michael is the U.S. representative for Billy Meier. And for all you folks that have just heard the theme song for this week was a song called The Lights by Robbie Robertson. Talks about Indians have always seen the lights. If you listen to the lyrics carefully, you can tell that this is an Indian that had been abducted. And anyway, kind of a really chilling, interesting song. And I don't think Michael hasn't heard it, but I'm sure as he plays the beginning part of the interview, he'll hear it. Well, welcome, Michael. How are you?
Doing fine. How about yourself there?
Doing pretty good. I really enjoyed, I remember a couple of interviews over the last couple of years on Coast to Coast with George Nouri. And just fascinated with your work and with Billy's. I was introduced to Billy back about 1991. George Green was doing a tour through, not Wayne Green, but George, doing a tour through through Salt Lake, and I was living there at the time, and he showed some slides at that gathering there, and it was just a fascinating subject. And then when you had said that that a body of prophecy existed, prophecies that had been given to Billy, naturally that piqued my interest, because I knew that that there are a lot of contactees and or abductees that have gathered up to the Durango, Colorado, or the Four Corners area of Colorado, Utah, Arizona, New Mexico, that they had been told that that would be a fairly safe time place during the earth changes, which jives with what the Hopi elders had said, that that eventually, even at their elevation, they would be underwater. And bringing into account what Michael Scallion said about the West Coast, the west part of the United States would fall. And, you know, this is something that's happened before, because they've discovered a seaport recently near Albuquerque. So so anyway, ETs have contacted humans. And, of course, they did that a lot in the Bible also. And are warning people. And yeah, tell a little bit about yourself, the folks, a little bit about yourself and your work, and about Billy and what his friends are saying.
Sure. Let's see exactly where to start. Well, I got involved in the Meyer case, if you will, about 26 years ago, when I walked into a bookstore and found the first photo book of the what was it called? Contact from the Pleiades, I think. And they were the crystal clear photos of up to three of these UFOs hovering in the sky in broad daylight all over different, you know, parts of rural Switzerland. And Billy Meyer was the man who had taken these photographs. And they were just stunning. And I knew when I looked at it that this has got to be real. Now, of course, 26 years later, that's not what I base my conclusions that the case is absolutely real and authentic on, but it was very compelling. I looked at the photos. I was just stunned. And I couldn't do much with that except enjoy the book, as many people had for some years. And then in 1986, I was sitting in a little cafe in Sedona, Arizona, with my daughter and a friend, and there was only one other fellow in there. We got to talking with him. Turned out he also lived in the L.A. area. He was a retired IRS agent, and we were talking about unusual things, and apart from being an IRS agent, which was unusual enough. But we were talking about the UFO situation, and the Meyer case came up, of course, and then he asked me if I had read the contact reports, or as they were sometimes referred to, the contact notes. And I said, no, what's that? And he said, well, those are the transcripts of the conversations that Meyer had, and continues to have, as a matter of fact, but had from about 1975 to just almost 1979. And I said, you're kidding. And he said, no. He said, there were even some quotes in that book. You remember in the picture book? And I said, yeah. He says, well, those are just some of the quotes from these conversations. And I said, wow, I'd love to be able to see those. He said, well, when you get back to L.A., come on up to Decker Canyon, and that's where I live, and got all this 2,000 pages of documents. And I said, okay. So went back to L.A., visited the fella. He gave me the 2,000 pages of documents. They were rough translations in the sense, not that they were an accurate, or a partial, although that may be true. They were translated by somebody whose English skills were not as good as their German skills. So the verbs were flying around at different parts of the sentences than they would be in English and what have you. And nonetheless, I read them literally for weeks and weeks on end. There were 2,000 pages. They were just fascinating. There was also a lot of not fascinating information in them, which only lends credibility to them, because it wasn't the type of thing that we get used to in some so-called New Age and UFO circles. You read so-called material from so-called ETs, and you get things like, "Greetings, beloved. We are the Space Brothers. Come to you in love and light to tell you that everything's great and you're going into the fourth dimension. Have a nice day." None of that kind of stuff ever appears in the Meyer contact reports. The people that speak to him are very direct, very logical, honest. they say exactly what they want to say, and they don't mince words. They're not into diplomacy and courting people's favor and sweet talking and all this, you know, head patting that goes on, as if we were simply a little species in a galactic petting zoo. So I was totally fascinated, but I put the contact, you know, the stuff away. After a few months, I just stuck it under the, you know, the bed because I couldn't do much more with it. 2 years later, in 1988, I'm reading a newspaper. I open it up. I think it was the L.A. Times or something, and I see an article about a new discovery from Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories, big national laboratory. And it said something to the effect of A-bomb testing tied to ozone damage. And it went on to talk about this new discovery and the percentages of damage and stuff. And I thought to myself, gosh, why doesn't this seem like a new discovery to me? And then something clicked. And I thought, gee, I wonder. And I went and I grabbed out some of the contact reports from underneath the bed. And there, lurking right down there, in maybe the seventh contact, is this information where Meyer is being given the same information in 1975. 13 years earlier. Now, that's not all, because when I read started to reread the contact reports, I found there was a place in there where they had actually, he referred back to documents that he had transcribed from them back in the 1950s where they told him about this. And now I'm really getting curious, you know, holy cow. Well, then within a short period of time, months and, you know, just years would pass, and new things would start showing up for me in the press. I would see an article about the connection between petroleum extraction and extracting natural gas and earthquakes and volcanic activities. And I'm going, wait a minute, I read that before. And sure enough, you know, it was in the Meyer material. And it goes on and on. And what I did is I also documented this on my website so people can read this stuff for free. There's a thing called Proof Beyond a Reasonable Doubt. And then there's also a link currently on the front page of the website, although I change things around every now and then. You'll be able to find this stuff on the website, because we maintain, I've got maybe 30 articles up there, and I've got some of Billy's articles, and just want people to be able to go somewhere where they can look, read this, read it for free, find out what's going on, and start to, you know, think about this comprehensively, put it in the context of other information that you are in touch with, that you're, you know, looking for further validation or to refute it or whatever your interest is. So the point being here that from that point on, I started to pay more attention, and I would be noticing articles, things on television or on radio would come up, and they'd be validating what Meyer was told before and what he was told before and what he was told before. And so I wrote this article, Proof Beyond a Reasonable Doubt, and just laundry listed a lot. And I did searches on the internet to try to find out a few things with a whole bunch of these things. And what I tried to find out was, did the event occur that was foretold? Did the specifics match up when they were given in the Meyer material? Did they coincide with the specifics of the event or discovery that they seemed to foretell? And who or what, you know, was the earliest publication, known occurrence date of this information coming into, you know, publication or awareness? What I found was, in every event so far, they all did occur. The ones that have occurred, you know, there are things obviously that I can't prove because they haven't happened yet, and hopefully some of them wouldn't. But those events occurred, and the details coincided with what Meyer was told. And Meyer turns out, I think with the exception of one of them, only one that I've been able to find so far, is the first person to publish the information. It's pretty outrageous. You've got not something that's general. And let's just give a little overview here, and let me admit, I am not an expert either on biblical prophecies, Native American prophecies, Tibetan, anything else. I simply know that there are, and I've read, I mean, but I'm no, would never claim expertise. I've read from a variety of sources, and we certainly have been told, warned, foretold for a long time, these are the interesting times coming, you know, and you might be able to make them a little less interesting if you all wake up and start, you know, realizing what you're here for and just how badly these things are going to go south. Well, the Meyer material that has all this prophetic information is, as I say, very pointed, very specific, et cetera, et cetera. And what these people have tried to impress on us through this information, a number of things that they've tried to impress, is that all life is subject to the laws of cause and effect, just like we know in physics, just like we know if we study the natural world. And there's nothing that is immune from that. So if, they say to us, if you do not want these things to occur, you need to change causal actions. You need to make course corrections. You need to stop before you send the pendulum out, thinking that it's disappearing and leveling everything in its path going away from you, and realize that it comes back. So either you're going to be brought back a bouquet of flowers and a bountiful crop, so to speak, or what's coming back is a scythe that's going to clear the fields, and you in it, innocent and guilty alike. We don't teach in our sophisticated world, we don't teach the fundamental reality of cause and effect as an operating principle for all of life. It might be taught in physics classes, you know, for the most part, but we certainly in the West have been taught you consume, you acquire, you buy, you move on, and you dispose of. But we don't think of, wait a minute, you know, how do you create that which is to be consumed? How do you conserve? How do you become a good steward of things? How do you avoid having things come back on you, seemingly unforeseen, like, oh my, why did that happen to us of all people? Well, let's take a little look at what was sent out in our name, you know, this type of thing. So, and in these prophecies and in this information, what I saw, just to not stray too much, and please interrupt me any time because I'll tend to go rambling on about it. But
we want you to ramble, please.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll ramble a little bit. What I saw was that not only, you know, was there dire stuff there. You have to understand, I say this to all the listeners, that there is positive information in this case in abundance. And there are specific positive points. There's even a document, 21 positive points, that's on the website, of things that the Pleiaren have said. Now, we have to say these alleged extraterrestrials, right? Okay, we've said it once. But that's the information. Whoever has produced all this and the photos and the films and the videos and the sound recordings and the metal samples and all the physical evidence that Meyer was given and was made available to him to then put up for analysis and examination, those five categories of physical evidence remain irreproducible to today, and maybe I'll briefly cover in a moment about how I defeated, opened the door for the skeptics to defeat themselves on the challenge. That's a whole hysterical story. But getting back to the point, once I saw all this information, you know, I was accumulating it, then I read something called the Enoch or Henoch prophecies, H-E-N-O-C-H. Not the Keys of Enoch book, but the Henoch or Enoch prophecies as given to Meyer on a couple of occasions, as early perhaps as 1981 and then again in 1987 with some more information in them. And once I read that document, which we also have put up for free as a link on the website, it's in the book, And Still They Fly, but I wanted that prophetic information to be made available to anybody. If they couldn't even afford to get a book they wanted, they can read this stuff. And it's very heavy. It's in some cases very specific, some cases a little less specific, but generally if you read the Henoch prophecies, you will get the point as to what's coming our way and what we might, you know, want to consider doing about all this. For those that, you know, so this is preaching to the choir probably. I think many of us already know that, you know, we consider ourselves awake to what's going on. We're trying to make our individual and collective course corrections. But this information is quite compelling. Once I read it, however, I thought to myself, gee, why would they even tell us about all this? If it's this dire, why would we even want to know?
I was left standing with three moons shining. Just on the outside. On the outskirts of civilization.
sure and stay tuned. We'll be returning in just a few moments.
Osceo is Cherokee for hello. This is Chia Sagonige, also known as Will Bluewater. I'm the International Communications Director for the Cherokee Nation of Mexico. I'm speaking on behalf of the seven clans and beloved woman Sharon Rogers, wife of Chief Priest and Principal Chief Charles L. Yatlohi Rogers, M.D., oncologist. Their family discovered the tomb in Mexico of Sequoia, the world-famous inventor of the Cherokee alphabet and the namesake of the Cherokee National Forest in California. The state of Oklahoma was very nearly named the state of Sequoia. Nación Cherokee de México, the Cherokee Nation of Mexico, is known in the United States as the Cherokee Nation of Sequoia of Mexico, Texas, and the USA Reservation and Church. Free of any charge, we are accepting citizenship and adoption applications, not only from Cherokee descendants, but from all people of good heart, from all lineages, just as we did for the 10,000 plus years before the United States government fairly recently imposed restrictions on Cherokee citizenship. Tennessee Governor Sam Houston had not one drop of Cherokee blood, yet he left office and later became Kalanu, or Speaker of Council, second only to Chief John Jolly of the Cherokee Nation West. The Republic of Mexico has recognized the Cherokee four times since the 1700s, and Spain five times before that. We possess original physical copies of all those treaties. In January of 2001, the San Andres Accords, enabling government-to-government tripartite relationships between sovereign Indian nations and the government of Mexico, were passed by the Mexican Congress. A few weeks later, the first such sovereign Indian nation, Nación Cherokee de México, was federally recognized in a solemn ceremony in Torreón, the capital of the state of Coahuila, formerly known as the province of Coahuila in Texas. The ceremony was followed by a fabulous celebration, which was attended by Cherokee elders from all over the Americas, including citizens of the federally recognized Cherokee Nation of Oklahoma, people like Squaw Yee, the famed bowmaker Al Heron. There is so much more to share with you, so I encourage you to visit our website at CherokeeDiscovery.com. While you are visiting the website, feel free to fill out a free citizenship application. Please be patient, though. We have no paid staff, and applications may take up to 9 months or more to get processed. If you're not a Cherokee, feel free to request adoption. And please don't forget, tell them Bluewater sent you. Ski. Wado.
And then I realized, well, wait a minute. The difference between a prediction and a prophecy is that a prediction is something that will come to pass, according to this theory, with certainty. There's no doubt about it. It's very often a cosmic event. There is a trajectory for an asteroid moving through space or this, that, and the other thing. It also can relate to certain, let's say, natural changes in, that the Earth will be producing, and these things will occur. They can't be avoided. However, also, prophecies are slightly different in as much as they are the likely, the probable outcome of causes that have been to date set in motion. This is the cause. Here's your likely effect. Unless we decide to wake up and do something about it. Some predictions are simply prophecies that have gone past the point of no return. So it's always up to us. What do we want to have occur? Now, when I read this Dyer Henoch Prophecies article, I thought, why would they even bother to tell us this is so heavy? Then I said, okay, it's a prophecy. And what they've done here, I had my little aha. For about 53 years, they have been giving Meyer specific, and it turns out, prophetically accurate scientific and world event-related information. It's been coming down the way they've said it was coming down, especially when they gave him predictions about things like earthquakes, volcanic eruptions, even actions, terrorist actions, war actions and things, and they were very specific. And you can read, again, just look at the documents and you'll see on this. Now, I figured out that the reason we now have this is so that we would look at that 53-year record of prophetic accuracy, and we would say to ourselves, well, if they've been this accurate for over a half century, it bears looking at what they're trying to warn us about coming down the pike. No brainer. What's the difficult part? Getting people, just ordinary, everyday people, and people in the higher echelons of media to take a look, to examine, to open, to think. You don't have to believe this stuff. As a matter of fact, this is a non-believer's case. I even after 26 years, and I've proved the case is real and true, simply based on the evidence and the investigative work that came before me and my own research, basically it's this. I can state to you unequivocally the case is real and true, and I can prove these facts. As for this other stuff here, there, and everywhere, it's speculative to me because I can't prove it. Am I willing to give a benefit of the doubt insofar as giving serious consideration to what comes through the Meyer case? Yes, I understand the motive. It's been clear. This has not been for personal gain. Meyer doesn't live like a millionaire. They live on a rural, you know, environment in Switzerland. They farm. They, you know, take care of themselves. It's high maintenance. I'm sure you know exactly what I'm talking about. If you live in that kind of an environment, you're not sitting around watching TV all day, because if you do, you don't eat and the place falls apart. So they have a bunch of, you know, activities that keep them going. They don't sit around worrying about what people think. They have a genuine non-profit little group, and under Swiss law, they better be careful about what they do, and they are, because the Swiss are, you know, quite astute financially and legally, and nonetheless, they even hassle them about what they publish sometimes, because Meyer doesn't pull any punches in what he says in his information, and he long ago, as have the alleged Pleiaren people, condemned the U.S. military policies, and basically what these prophecies have been saying for about 25 years. If the U.S. does not change the direction of its military policies and continues on this aggressive world domination, you know, thing, ultimately, as early as next year, we could see the beginning of the Third World War, as early as 2006. It doesn't have to be, but it could. And should that unfold into a reality, which, of course, will be, you know, like, you know, throwing gasoline on a fire continuously, there would be ultimately the loss, as it would sound familiar, I'm sure, about two-thirds of the population of the world, that's us folks, the northern hemisphere would be rendered nearly uninhabitable for a long period of time. And what they described coming to the U.S. was unprecedented destruction, devastation, and annihilation. I know a lot of us listening to the show live right here in the U.S. We care about such things, let alone the kind of damage and destruction that has been, is, and may yet be visited upon other people throughout the world by policies that are run by our government that many of us certainly do not agree with. So the content here, when you get into the heart of the matter, this case is far less about extraterrestrials and UFOs than it is about our future survival. And I put out a DVD. It's called The Meyer Context, The Key to Our Future Survival. And I wholeheartedly subscribe to it being the key. And many people could say a key, you know, but certainly a key that we would want to consider the content of this case, the intention of it, the dynamic tension of the case wherein, and I'll just put my perspective, there is another race of human beings, the Pleiaren are human, they're not little gray guys, who have, for a very long period of time, and even longer than the 63 years that they've been in contact with Meyer, attempting to rectify certain damage that was set in motion by their own distant ancestors and forefathers, as well as other extraterrestrials who did come here representing themselves as the creator of the universe eons ago, the gods of our various religions, according to the Pleiaren. They have spent a very long time, including this past 63 years as of now, attempting to insert into our world in an oblique and non-inflictive way information for us that we might awaken to a bigger, truer picture of life, And messages that, of course, have been given by many people throughout the ages. There's some things that are quite unique to this case, but, you know, it doesn't take an extraterrestrial or a Swiss farmer to know we're in trouble and that we need the course correct. But they have been doing a job which is, I think, a very, very, very difficult one to not interfere. They've seen the comings and goings of all sorts of terrible things that have affected all sorts of innocent people on this planet. You know, from the recent tsunami to all of the wars and everything else, and their particular, if you want to call it, mission, is one that extends back in time many, many, many millennia. And in trying to assist humanity to make a course correction away from things that they say have been enormously damaging to us and have led us to perpetuate this damage upon ourselves, they have to stay out of our affairs. They cannot intercede, interfere, even interact openly. They cannot violate our free will because they've been able to successfully and accurately gauge that we are not prepared to receive an extraterrestrial presence without either or, venerating, fearing, attacking, giving up all of our power to, or going so far as to have mass psychosis, people killing themselves and going nuts and all of this stuff. So they know that the best that can be done, at least for now, certainly from that group, is for this information to be given, inserted into our world, offered to us in this way that we may wake up and start to make a difference. The core of the case is self-responsibility. As far as they're concerned, no one's coming to save us. There's no operation liftoffs. There's no rapture or rupture, or whatever, probably a lot of ruptures, but no raptures. There's none of this happening according to them. Many people would not like to hear that, I'm sure, or feel that it's got to be wrong, or have another, you know, point of view, and that's fine. I'm only telling you what's in the case. I certainly don't, know from my own experience details of things that are either true or not true, as told to Meyer and or other people. So that's a little starter on it.
So these, the Pleiarians, that you're saying they actually came from a similar situation that we were in, only they're just further down the road.
Well, yeah, that's true, too. Their distant forefathers, who in some cases, of course, contribute to being our forefathers, not our exclusive ones, but go back millions of years. These were powerful, very gigantic space-traveling races, human races, that developed high technology and had the ability that they exercised to travel in space and to attack other developing worlds and civilizations and destroy places and peoples or to bring them under bondage. I mean, they had a Star Wars kind of history. It's not an accident that we have some of these concepts in our own media that have been fancified somewhat, but these things have a certain basis in truth. As human life develops, as it does in this universe, one of countless billions, according to them, as it develops, it goes through various stages, and a lot of these stages are quite rough. They're not pleasant, but the goal is to civilize, to spiritualize, to bring the spiritual and the technological into a balance, not to exceed spiritual development so much more vastly with technology that we are simply, sophisticated apes, and we didn't descend from apes, but I'm using the analogy that we are like monkeys with, you know, A-bombs here. And, press this button. Oops, you know, there go all the bananas. So these folks come from the kind of understanding that we can't yet quite probably appreciate because they've been there and done that. And if what they're saying about their forefathers and other ETs having been the gods of our various religions and, playing with humanity, human life as pawns in many cases, countless millions of people who've died and been slaughtered in the process of all of that stuff, and they themselves claim that their civilization for 50,000 years has lived in peace. And that's, that might sound either like a long time or a short time, depending on how you look at the overall thing, but it's a short period of time compared to their whole history. We're very unique because of different factors regarding our existence, regarding where we've come from, where certain strains of humanity were brought from, and how we got to Earth and a couple other planets in the solar system, where there is no longer any human life, and in one case, no longer a planet. But the histories that they present, the understanding that they have, they would have to be suffering in a certain way, quite patiently but painfully observing what they know in many ways is needless suffering and pain, that's created and promoted by people who have an unquenchable materialistic greed, whose minds are rotted away, who are delusional in their beliefs, and who think that their job here on Earth is to destroy other beliefs and other people and to dominate the planet and all this other pathetic nonsense. So this is something that isn't totally unique to us. We've got to go through certain things, but the real choice is, do we go through kicking and screaming? But, you know, a little wiser for it, or do we go through really just losing it? And that's what I'm really afraid of. No matter what, with all the efforts of all people, we've got so much unnecessary pain and difficulty that we, humanity, brings upon itself. And that's, you know, so if these people are in any way, shape, or form who they represent themselves to be, and if some of the stuff that I've read, you know, I'll give you an example of something, because a lot of the contact information, these contact reports, aren't circulated really widely for a few reasons, some of which is that they have to go through an official translation process, and that process requires lots of going back and forth because of the nature of the German language and specificity of words, and it's a whole thing. So there was some information, I think it was right around the time of the first Gulf War, where the ETs were monitoring the whole thing, as they do everything that goes on the planet, and they, one of them, the men and women function on the level of equality in their, you know, worlds. They respect the nature of the differences, the biological and nature differences, but they don't exalt one, sex over the other. So I think you more than well understand through your own traditions the balance of polarities and the respect and honoring of both polarities that has to be. And when women try to become men or men become women, we're out of, you know, balance for the most part. Well, one of the women who was involved in the, you know, observing all this stuff, Meyer was told that she had to undergo their own version of some kind of psychological emotional counseling, because she was privy to watching some of the brutality, actually, that the Iraqis were committing against the Kuwaiti people in the first Gulf War, and she couldn't take it. It was so, you know, so terrible for her at her, you know, despite the fact that, oh, these are more evolved people, the inhumaneness and brutality. And one of the other ETs described something that he had witnessed. I won't go into any of this because we don't need to, but it had to do with something going on in Iran that they described in great detail. And you can put any name or label or country or what have you on it. On Earth humanity, where we certainly seem to be equal opportunity destroyers. And they have observed this. They know that it's not like, gee, how can those people do that? They understand. But that doesn't minimize the sorrow that any more advanced person, Earth human alone, has when we are made aware of this unnecessary brutality and aggression and violence that we perpetrate on each other here. So they have to kind of wait it out. And in some cases, they've already seen some of the coming things. Some are still fluid, but some aren't. And it's got to be an enormously, enormously painful and difficult thing that in some future time we may well, you know, be in the role of observing and monitoring another race going through its barbarism with each other. So they are saying to us as well that we live countless millions of lives, countless millions in the process of evolution to once again merge with what they call the creation. This universe, in their cosmology, is the living conscious entity of all creation that goes on in this universe. So when Meyer had asked them, you know, about their understandings about God, they were freely and bluntly said to him, well, we don't use that term because that, we know, always refers to the, you know, in many cases, our own forefathers who were here representing themselves as God, Lord, Creator, etc., when that which we call the creation, I would say the closest thing that pops to my mind in terms of Western thought, meaning around here, would be the Great Spirit, that type of a term. It's, but they are very, very, you know, clear in saying this is not a personality, this is not a personification, anthropomorphic, you know, guy in the sky with a long gray beard. This is, this creation is the source of all life within itself, and all things exist within it, and it exists within all things. And the unique aspect of the human being is that we humans have a human spirit, which is, we might say, a hologram of the entire creation.
Indians have always seen the light.
Hi friends, this is Will Bluewater. If you have been listening to our program for long, then you know that Mark the Badger Borcherding does a Mayan birth reading for each of our interview guests. Mark suggested that he give away a free reading for each donation of $20 or more to Prophecy Keepers Radio, a ministry of Oklahoma Native American Church or the White Roots of Peace. So please support Prophecy Keepers Radio by making your free will offering at nativeamericanchurch.us. and you'll receive this gift reading. If you choose to make a recurring donation, once you've received your own reading, you can give readings away as free gifts. So why not head over to nativeamericanchurch.us and make an offering right now. Hope to be talking with you soon. Bye now.
The potential of the universe rests within each person. It does not suddenly explode into a universe, but over countless millions of lifetimes, it develops in wisdom and experience and knowledge so that eventually, they say, we do re-merge with this creation for the purpose of partaking in yet another creation. And we cannot even begin to fathom the reality of that. We don't know. We may have beliefs about whether this is true, it isn't true. We believe in reincarnation or a human spirit. That's fine, but we don't know. So they have put out information from the point that they claim what they do know and what they don't know. And they say, well, reincarnation is a fact of life. They have, in their own worlds, resolved lots of interesting questions because of what they say is their knowledge and certainty about the human spirit. They resolved abortion questions. They resolved all sorts of things that we can't. We can't with certainty. We may be able to come to the right conclusions, quote-unquote, but we still don't have certain knowledge, and until we have certain knowledge, we won't have factual certainty.
You know, it sounds like Pleiarians have been reading the Zohar.
I'm sorry, I missed that.
It sounds like the Pleiarians had been reading the Zohar, which is a mystical Jewish text, or Hebrew text, and because basically the view of the Creator and the Zohar pretty much lines up with what they were saying there.
Well, it could well be that some of that does. Although my background is Jewish, I'm not religious. I came to doing some research in the Old Testament fairly recently. I don't have to necessarily go into that unless you really want, but I wasn't pleased with what I learned. But in terms of that perspective, they also use the term Zohar. What I think we may be able to say here, and again, this is, you know, purely information as I understand it from the case, they have said that in many cases, the ETs that were here representing themselves as the Lord, God, Creator, what have you, were beings that did have spiritual knowledge, high levels in some cases. But also, in the course of evolution, high spiritual knowledge is not a guarantee that it will be used in a spiritual way or for the benefit. When you have high technology and spiritual knowledge, you still have the temptations and tendencies to turn that power into domination, misinformation, brutality, rulership, all sorts of things. There are, I would agree, without knowing all the specifics, that there certainly are and must be in the Jewish tradition, in the Tibetan tradition, Hindu tradition, Buddhist tradition, all sorts of places are you going to find truth. The problem, according to them, is that while any and every religion can, may, and probably does have seeds of truth in it, there is none that is completely truthful, and all have been somewhat corrupted to lesser or greater degrees for the purpose of controlling human beings, manipulating, what have you. You could probably say, and it may be arguable, that in terms of world religions as we know them, and again, there are people that know far more about religion than I do, and this is a kind of just superficial statement from my very superficial observation. I would say that what you might call pure Buddhism, non-deistic Hinduism, those types of things, contain very, 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 very high levels of truth, lots of it. I would say that my non-deep understanding of a lot of Native American traditions and Tibetan traditions also contain truth. I am not going to give that nod to Judaism and Christianity only because while they do contain the truth, they have been among the most manipulated and manipulating of religious traditions, if we look at the history objectively. Islam, and they, the Pleiaren, and through Meyer, have written quite a bit about the origins of Islam and how it was also manipulated and falsified and turned into the kind of cult in the worst sense, where it is a radical Islam, and where they've instituted things that were actually counter to what Muhammad had said and intended and how that came about. So you've got those three major religions, which right now, of course, have everybody at each other's throats in terms of the religious dynamic.
Same thing happened in Mormonism, and it happened very early because Joseph Smith got involved with Freemasonry.
There you go.
And
that's one I don't know anything really about.
Well, not that Freemasonry is bad. It's just that he was mixing a couple of things that didn't belong together, and he was warned, not to. He was told, look, you're being given something that's pure. Don't listen to those men. And so basically, what is Mormonism really doesn't have a whole lot to do with the Book of Mormon.
Mm.
Basically, the same story today. What is Muhammadism doesn't have a whole lot to do with Muhammad.
Right.
And what's Christian doesn't have a whole lot to do with Christ. And that's the reason why we're having to go through a sorting out period here. Most Native American people, it was actually illegal to practice our religion for 80, 90 years.
Until, yeah.
1979, and yeah, I know in the Cherokee culture, those that understand the original Cherokee religion say that it was very much kind of like Buddhism in one way, but very much like early Christianity without a redeemer.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, then you get our people. Basically, we haven't had a culture since 1880. We just have a lot of people arguing about what they think the culture is. And it's just the biggest mess you ever saw. And the Hopi look forward to, of course, they're a mess there too, because now that the cat's out of the bag and the Hopi elders revealed the Hopi prophecies, going back to the 1950s and 60s,
mm-hmm.
here lately the Hopi tribal council, there never was anything such as a Hopi tribe. They had, like the Cherokees, they lived in towns or villages that were sovereign. And but now we have a BIA approved council that says
right.
that none of this information is to be discussed, should never have been disseminated in the first place. Well, that's like a grandchild you know, saying this, you know, my grandfather shouldn't have said that.
Right.
You know, and then you get a lot of people eating that up, too, and causing a lot of hatred. It's just the biggest mess you ever saw. And so, you know, the purpose of Prophecy Keepers is to allow people to take a look at prophecy from every possible, including off-world sources, prophecies, and to see where they see where they meet and where they don't meet. And but what's interesting is this week I found something that I wasn't even looking for. And when that kind of thing happens, it gets my attention, and I sent you an email about this. But we are interested in the lifestyle called All Things Common, because this was a lifestyle that was lived, you know, by early Christians, and, you know, to one extent or another, it's been being lived today by people like the Amish and the Hutterites and Mennonites and, you know, monastic people all over the world, you know, whether or not they don't practice sex between the sexes. Some do, some don't. It's just the All Things Common lifestyle, the utopian lifestyle. The Urantia book says this is what we need to do. Edgar Casey says this is what we need to do. Anyway, I was doing a search just earlier this week on it, and I found a link, a mention of All Things Common on www.bibleufo.com. And I clicked on the link, and it was a page talking about Bible anomalies. It was saying, you know, here, take a look at this. Why aren't Christians doing this? And, of course, the whole website introduces the fact that the Bible talks about the gods flying in, flying, spinning, rotating, metallic, high-speed, high-tech craft.
Right.
They're well-armed, well-intentioned. Some earlier ones that, you know, Zechariah Sitchin talks about, apparently they weren't too well-intentioned. The Bible talks about those as being the fallen ones. So we have, you know, so the Old Testament talks about a conflict between the good guys and the bad guys out there in outer space. And, you know, it points out that, you know, where the Bible is saying heaven, it's actually talking about the sky. And so we have a war in heaven going on. We have the same kind of conflicts going on in the heavens and in outer space as we have here on Earth, apparently.
Yep.
And ergo the old saying that you see on tombstones, as it is above,
yeah,
here it is below. You know?
Yeah, so, exactly.
So basically, you know, everybody's got a choice. Whether to be part of the problem or part of the solution. And, I mean, I was raised like most people, still consider myself to be a political conservative, although I'm less of a Republican than I am a libertarian now.
Mm-hmm.
But I still have, you know, I still have a lot of respect. I mean, I'm glad that there's a two-party system. I mean, George Washington, you know, said, hey, if we ever do get involved in a two-party system, it'll be the death of the country. But back over the last 200 years, I'm glad that there's been that pendulum swing. Because it's, you know, you can go back and see that there's been course corrections. But now, you know, since World War II, we have so many people in high places either directly speaking about the threat from outer space, you know, whether it was Douglas MacArthur, talking directly several times, you know, President Eisenhower speaking obliquely, just about all the past presidents, you know, but President Bush saying that he wants it looked into and that Dick Cheney would look into it. Nothing ever happened, of course.
Right.
And, of course, President Reagan and all his many statements. And but it's an interesting, well-done website. The only thing that bothered you and me both was this reference to a rapture, and in other words, a pickup or a rescue mission. And,
right.
You know, this is the raging thing that's going on in the Bible community is, And this idea of a rapture has really only been taught since the 1830s.
Yeah, exactly. Isn't that weird?
But there are, I mean, the Bible does talk about that at a certain point, and most people are realizing, even Hal Lindsey, who wrote The Late Great Planet Earth, that started this whole book, I mean, this whole controversy, he's now backing off from saying that, well, instead of a pre-tribulation rapture, you know, it's either going to be mid-tribulation or post-tribulation. Well, you know, the fact of the matter is, you know, well, the problem is because of the translations and things that are written, that's the reason why they've got the debate to begin with. And personally, I believe that if there is going to be one, it's going to be post-tribulation. We're going to have to live through the tribulation, and then, you know, and of course that opens up a big can of worms. Well, how do we do that? How do we prepare for something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Well, there is a way to prepare. Apparently, these people, Klingons and other visitors, do like to see people living cooperatively. They like to see them living close to the spirit, close to the earth. And if, you know, if mercy were going to be shown to anybody, it's going to be shown to people that are living amongst each other, at least in peace. Because in Native American traditions, I mean, these people were afforded, you know, the early whites noticed that there were supernatural things that were going on among people that lived the all things common communal lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And the Bible itself promises that there will be, that you'll be fed like a stall-fed calf, that there will be some kind of divine help. And, you know, in my wife's family, you know, they lived out in the middle of nowhere, and not just her, but others that'll swear they've been fed by angels, because there couldn't have, you know, Betty's grandma, you know, ran out of food, and then she told the kids, set the table. And they grumbled and said, you know, well, you ain't got no food, ain't, you know, ain't going to be none. She said, shut up and set the table. And then there comes the knock on the door, and they look out in the box of food. And, you know, it's been snowing, and there's no footprints leading to or from. So, you know, there's such things as miracles, and somebody is helping out people that have a certain spiritual mindset. They seem to know what we're thinking. And I'll tell you, you know, there's a description of close encounters. I guess there's encounters of the five different kinds. And I've seen these ships several different occasions. I've never met any of the inhabitants of these crafts, but I have had a couple of interesting things happen where. Well, let's see, I guess going back about 12, 13 years ago, living in northern Arizona, and I think a story, I've told the story before, and I don't want to bore the listeners, but you know, I pointed this flying thing out to my wife, and I said, you know, that could possibly be a UFO. I said, I don't see any running lights, you know, the usual green and red lights, and I said, let's watch it. Basically, it was about the size of the star Sirius, which is the brightest star in the sky. It was moving north to south. And when it reached the zenith directly over us, it turned on some kind of a light, and it was almost as big as the moon for a couple of seconds. Then it turned it off and went its way. Well, I had this happen another time 3 or 4 years ago. I was here in the Ozarks. It's pretty good. It was what astronomers call seeing, because there's not a lot of light around. We're 250 miles from the nearest city. And I was teaching someone what some of the constellations were. And, you know, you can see satellites moving at night. And I said to my friend, okay, I said, you see that bright star directly overhead? And I said, that was Vega, and I said, there's a small constellation around it called Lyra. And as a matter of fact, I said, you see that satellite moving over to the right? Now, we were facing, our rear was west, in front of us and slightly to the left, you can see the North Star. So we've got, and then to our right, you see this, we're looking almost straight up, and you see this satellite moving in from the right. And I said, okay, in 10 seconds, I said, that satellite should be real close to the constellation. I said, then you'll know what I'm looking at. Because sometimes people looking at the stars, they can't recognize patterns. So we counted down 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then just as I said 1.
Just on the outside.
Friends, this is Will Bluewater, encouraging you to obtain an authorized participant or AP card and become a federally recognized Native religious practitioner. Presently, Aqua Native American Church is the only Native American church spiritually blessed by the Rosebud Reservation Native American Church and has a certificate of existence in the state of Utah that is authorized to worship on or off tribal grounds and has met the standard of sincerity and vow of poverty standards in the state of Utah and federal courts. This card is designed to assist all people regardless of their racial makeup, political affiliation, social and or financial status, and receiving their constitutional rights. This card is also designed to assist United States judicial officials to honor their solemn oath to protect and exercise the principles of the United States Constitution while carrying out their duty and serving their fellow citizens. To join the movement that is strengthening and exercising the principles of the United States Constitution, please obtain your AP card by visiting NativeAmericanChurch.us today.
A huge light shot out from the back of that, what I thought was a satellite, in a 90-degree direction. It couldn't have been a solar sail because it was a 90-degree direction from where anything could have been reflected from, let's say, the setting sun, which would have been below our horizon, but available to it because it was in outer space. So then that light swept around down and on us for 2 or 3 seconds, and the thing was almost as big as the moon. And, I mean, we're just sitting there with our mouths open. So twice, I think I have been in some kind of mental contact, and there I am, folks, I am a nut. I have been in mental contact with UFOs, but I'm not the only person that's reported such things. So I think, you know, I think they know, you know, maybe they need to know what we're talking about, or, you know, they, I mean, we've got satellites nowadays that can possibly pick up conversation. So certainly, who knows what kind of technology they have, or whether they're here and we can't see them. But they are apparently watching, and they do certainly have some good advice for us. Yeah. I'm glad they're talking. Now, these people, the Pleiades, are they saying they're from the Pleiades?
No, not the ones we see in the night sky, because they come from the direction of the Pleiades, but in an altered time-space configuration about 80 light-years beyond, because what they're saying is the Pleiades themselves are not inhabited, nor are they inhabitable. They are young blue stars. They may never actually support life, but there is, in this altered kind of dimension, physical, you know, system that these people live in that they found, you know, tens of thousands of years ago.
Yeah, because the Pleiades is actually a nebula.
Oh, okay.
Seven-star nebula, so I can... So they come from the direction of the Pleiades, and visiting us, and so they're saying that that their forefathers came here and represented thousands of years ago to us that they were agents of the Creator.
Well, that's, or that they were, you know, the Creator themselves. See, the harsh part about this for religious beliefs is simply what they're saying is this, that the God, or actually gods of the Old Testament and the New Testament, were extraterrestrial humans, that they were that never at any point in time in history on any place in this universe has the creation itself, the great spirit, whatever you want to call it, actually ever embodied and directly had personal communications or relationships with people, that this is an impersonal force. It does not involve itself. It doesn't have a chosen people, an only begotten son, a solitary prophet. It doesn't take sides in wars or football games or anything else. Creation, its own creation, is perfect in the sense that this is the creation we live in with its immutable laws and operation. If we stop to think about the fact that all of us, with our big daily concerns, are living on a piece of cosmic lint that is floating through space, that nonetheless has the perfection of its orbits and its function, that everything that we know in our life operates according to immutable laws. My desk is made of wood, which is made of atoms and molecules and all the rest of the stuff, behaving as wood, and it will remain wood, and it will change only in accordance with the behavior, according to the laws of creation. What they're saying is that this force that put forth all these laws, that this creates and sustains everything, has no quote-unquote personal relationship. It never sacrificed itself in any form to be crucified. It doesn't condemn one people over another or bestow a particular portion of land for one group or another. It's completely irrelevant to the magnitude of reality and creation. But we as humans have taken on various beliefs which were sometimes well-intentioned. Things get distorted and all of the rest of it. And so we have religions that create hierarchies and fear, guilt, and damnations, and lead to all sorts of misunderstandings as to how it really works. We have to work through this. My take on this is the following. I think people come to, pure religion per se for two basic reasons. And the number one reason is because people have the part of them that's good, wants to do good. It wants to be in accordance with the will of whatever it is that has created us and given life its own, existence.
Those are people that...
Pardon me?
Fellowships.
That's right. All that is the flow of goodness, commonality, fellowship, peacefulness. And the other part that, and this could be true of any religion, I'm thinking, the other part would be out of fear. If one is fearful about life, death, survival, guilt, a lot of things that are other compelling forces for people that go into religion. Now, what the Pleiadians have said is this. There is no need for religion as we know it. There is need for spiritual truth. Spiritual truth is like a pinnacle of what is so spiritually, that we all have, in a course of our millions of lifetimes, the opportunity to discover and grow into and all of that. It won't really matter what we believe ever. It's what is so, what is true, what will be shown to be true, what will be proven, if you will. And from that perspective, which sounds maybe a little cold and clinical, it really is a necessary perspective, because we have to understand what truth is, not what we like, what we believe, what we prefer. If we recognize what is, then we can go to what we prefer. But let's say positive thinking or belief-based thinking alone only covers over and maybe makes us feel better or worse, depending on what happens. But it doesn't address what's truth. And truth can be very harsh and painful, too. If we're on the wrong direction, going in the wrong direction on things, no matter how much belief or prayer or anything about it, we will ultimately have to make that course correction based on truth and knowledge. So it's a harsh and, in a way, unenviable thing that Meyer has come to deliver, if you will. He is simply the human vehicle for the information. You can say that someone who delivers accurate prophecy is a prophet. He's a prophet. There it is. It's a very inglorious and thankless job, because people really just want to kill you. They want to shoot at him. There have been 19 attempts on his life. The whole thing of mystifying human beings and making deities out of people and then creating the idea of angels and these other things, within the Meyer Pleiadian information, that's erroneous for us. It's not that we should feel guilty or bad about it, or that we should even believe them. They're saying this is reality as we know it. If you contemplate these things, you will come into more and more understanding of reality, human beings, and you will figure this out for yourselves to a good degree, and you will then know. You won't have to believe it. It's like I don't run around saying, I believe in gravity. You know, I can be a child or an animal with no conscious awareness of gravity. It still operates, and it's observable. All religious beliefs require belief. And what the one thing that most people who are religious don't recognize is when they, sometimes people will say to me, well, you know, God would feel this way or says this or that or anything. And I say, you believe that and that's fine. You know, I'm not a believer in that way. And what you have to, if you're really logical and analytical and you take a look at that kind of thinking, it is the individual, always in every case, who creates the God, meaning this. There are, let's just say there's six religions, main religions. And people, they don't, you don't find that five of them have no adherents or followers. You find that all of them have people who are, quote-unquote, believers in them. Why is that? Because the individual person resonated with or chose that particular religion and its path. That means that that person said to themselves, this is true. So you can have religious beliefs, political beliefs, anything you want to believe in, it's the individual says, that's the truth as far as I'm concerned. The difference is here that in terms of spiritual truth, it won't matter whether we believe it or not. It is either going to be true and ultimately we will find and learn that and know it, or it won't be true. Do you see what I'm driving at here?
Sure. Well, so what they're saying is that what they're recommending is that unless you want to be continually reaping and sowing, you know, Jesus talked about, you know, reaping and sowing. I mean, it's pretty basic. You know, and if he said anything that lined up with what they said, you know, this idea of, you know, that you will either suffer or benefit from the consequences of your own actions.
Sure.
And, you know, so why not take the side, either in this life or, you know, hopefully so that, you know, if we're going to be reborn again, to benefit ourselves, it would benefit us to live peaceably, live simply, and in touch with our universe, hopefully, and the others in our universe that are like-minded. But, you know, there's always the caveat that you need to be wise as serpents but gentle as doves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, hopefully, as the universe marches on, there'll be less of them and more of us good guys. And,
Well, I'm sure there'll be a balance that, it has an interesting dynamic to it forever and ever. One thing that you may want to know, my website is theyfly.com, T-H-E-Y-F-L-Y, and if you go there to theyfly.com, there's a link to a website from a fellow named James Deardorff. This will just give you, you know, more food for thought. And that website of Deardorff's is very interesting because it deals with a book that's called The Talmud of Emmanuel, spelled with a J. And this is connected to Meyer. He was one of the co-discoverers of it in 1963. And I know we don't have time now to really go into this at depth, but I'll just say this little bit. If you read that, you will find some very interesting information on what may well be the original writings of the man. Let's put it this way, the original teachings of the man who was known to us as Jesus, who, according to this information, actually never had that name, but was known as Emmanuel. It's a very, very interesting subject to, you know, to study and to discuss, because you can find some tremendously interesting information.
Yeah, there's mention of different names, and Emmanuel being one of them.
Mm-hmm. In Isaiah and in Matthew, and you will find. I mean, obviously, we can't go into tremendous details on this right now. But you will find that there is. How can I put it? it is well worth looking into for anyone that is interested in Christianity, Judaism, Islam, any religion, to read what this is about and how it, you know, how it may well be quite important source material.
Oh yeah, if for no other reason than to underline and re-familiarize yourself with what, you know, because unless you have like a, what they call an old red letter edition of the Bible, really it's kind of hard to really see what Jesus says as opposed to what everybody else said he said. Especially, you know, because the vast majority of the Bible is actually written by Paul, and
And after the time, I mean, it certainly is not, cannot be in any way, shape, or form understood as anything other than the writings of human beings post-events, with a great deal of even conflict within the books themselves. If when you get into it, well, you see, that's the thing about when you do read the Talmud of Emmanuel, you're going to get an enormously different view of who this man may well have been and what, you know. I don't want to open too much of it up at this point because
I've been on a site, and it's well worth the visit and spending hours and hours there because it's just it's good advice because there has to be something pure because when you figure out all the filters that the Bible that is in the English language, I mean, look how many language translations it's been through. You know, it's just kind of ridiculous to think that, and especially since King George or King James specifically wanted things skewed with the reference to what the name of the Lord was, because he wanted to prevent us all from using his name in vain. And you know, the fact of the matter is none of those were his names anyway. They were just oblique references to him.
Mm.
It's just really kind of comical. But still, you know, it's like anything. You really have to put some study into it to understand it. And unfortunately, I believe about 99% of most Christians would rather read something that somebody else said, you know, what came from the source, rather than actually think about it. And probably 90% of them don't read the scriptures at all.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't have the time, they don't have the inclination, and, you know, certainly to make it a study, pretty much non-existent. And you know, because we just don't have time anymore. And, 500 years ago, we had people, that's all they did in their whole lives, and they ended up being called theologians, and then everybody trusted them, and then they trusted them to the point where, you know, they were being led astray, and they had the Reformation, and it's been a real interesting history here on Earth, and it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
yep.
And by the way, you know, you're welcome to stay and talk as long as you have time.
Unfortunately, I've got to run somewhere fairly shortly, and I'd love to be able to do this again if you'd like.
Yeah, we can let you go. It's been a wonderful interview. What we really wanted to do was pique people's interest to get them over to your website and some of the links off of your website, because it's people need a good excuse to get on your site. I know.
I appreciate it.
You know, if you need one, you've got one now. Hope to hear you again. So I hope you're getting around some of the other radio stations too. Well, we sure appreciate you, Michael.
Well, I thank you very, very much, and I hope that your listeners will, you know, feel free to take a look and challenge the information and, you know, go for it.
Well, sure.
Wow, great, wow. That's really great. Yeah, and you'll send me information so that we can get a link up, too. I have someone that does the stuff for me. I'm not very computer literate, to be honest with you.
Thank you so much, Michael.
My pleasure, and we'll speak soon, yeah?
You betcha. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Let the truth be known to all mankind again.
Thanks for listening to the Wisdom of the Elders on Prophecy Keepers Radio, revealing closely guarded ancient secrets here in the modern information age of Aquarius.
Wisdom.